Well, good afternoon, folks. It's the Agriculture Show here at 100.3 Sound FM, CKMS Radio, your best and local community radio station. I have a great guest today, and we're going to talk a little bit about agriculture again as our favorite topic here. This is Dennis Jansen, and he's going to speak about a survey done about agriculture. Hi, Dennis. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you, too. Thanks for having me.
I had good fun today. I was out in the street waiting for Dennis to come along. I saw this chap doing a fast jog up the street. He says, hey, Dennis, come here. And I know it's tough when you come to a station, like a location the first time. Where the heck are you?
Yeah, it was a little tricky to find. I was having a little bit of trouble with technology, so we don't always get along so well. But I'm here, so I guess that's what's important.
That is important. And today we're going to talk about a study done, commissioned by Grain Farmers of Ontario.
By Farmers Feed Cities, actually.
Farmers Feed Cities, and a little bit about what those results were. So it should be a great show, folks. We're going to have a lot of fun today. So let's play a tune or two, and we'll be right back. And you're listening to CKMS Radio, 100.3 Sound FM. And this is
the Waterloo.
This is the voice of agriculture here in the Waterloo region. So we'll be right back.
CKMS Radio, 100.3 Sound FM. The Agricultural Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture. The Federation represents the primary producers in the region of Waterloo. Our goal is to promote the farm community in support of innovation, hard work, and compassion that is emblematic of the region of Waterloo. The WFA strives to bring together the policy needs of the farmer with the needs of society.
Mobilizing the youth of today, educating them in a better way, training so they won't go astray. Hear what me say, yeah. Give your head to clearer thinking, loyal heart, got to be persevering. Do the Lord a service, make your hands willing, your help for better living.
4-H
for community and country.
4-H
respond to food security.
4-H
I gotta make the best better. Let us get together.
4-H
scenery. She can make a chocolate soda go. You ought to go around and dig it. When she's working at the spigot, you can hear her calling orders like this. Give me a ham white down and a burger wrap, cider slaw and a seven layer. OJ up, wreck two in a cup, and a boogie woogie blue plate. Give me a crippled beef on a load of hay. Combo rye and a bottle of ale. Coming through with a slab of moo and a boogie woogie blue plate. Draw one, draw two, get that coffee perking. Draw three, draw four, hold that mayo on the chopped egg working. Want a tuna wheat with a side of fries. 86 on the cherry pies. Cider greens on the Franks and beans. And a boogie woogie blue plate. With a side of fries. 86 on the cherry pies. Cider greens on the Franks and beans. And a boogie woogie blue plate. Boogie woogie blue plate.
when we're back. And that's the Boogie Woogie Blue Plate by Louis Jordan. And he was a singer and from way back. And what a great lively song. And it's all about food. And we're talking about food. And today, my guest is Dennis Jensen. And Dennis, you are with the Grain Farmers of Ontario. You want to tell us a little bit about your job right now?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm actually working with Farmers Feed Cities, which is it's the consumer outreach branch of Grain Farmers of Ontario.
Okay.
And basically what Farmers Feed Cities does is we promote and highlight the importance of Ontario's farmers and agricultural industry as a whole. You know, we eat food three times a day. We put, you know, gas in our cars that has ethanol in it. Agriculture and, you know, agri-food affects us every day, you know, all the time. So it's a big deal, and we want to, you know, highlight how important our farmers and agriculture is.
And towards these ends then, the study was commissioned. Well, tell us about the study and who did it.
Sure. We ran the study back in September. It was conducted by Vision Critical. We surveyed 1,500 people nationwide, and we basically set out to find out what purchasing decisions consumers were making when it comes to food and what they were basing these decisions on.
Okay, that's good. Yeah.
And what we found was, you know, 97% of the people surveyed agreed, you know, food choices, are important to them. And, you know, that's great. Absolutely. That's awesome. But what we found is a lot of the choices that these consumers were making were actually based on misconceptions and not always on the facts.
Mm-hmm. And I just had a quick look at the questions that were provided, and thanks to Sarah at one of your PR groups and for sending that along. And we'll look at those questions; they're great questions. I think our audience would be just delighted to hear those questions. So, before you became working for Farmers Feed Cities, you were telling me you were your home is Drayton. Do you want to tell us a little bit about how you managed to get here on a Tuesday afternoon in the rain?
Absolutely. So yeah, Drayton is where I'm from originally, so not too far from here. Actually, right now I'm residing in Guelph. I'm a student at the university there, and I'm on co-op at the moment, pursuing my degree in agricultural business. I'm on co-op for Farmers Feed Cities, and I made my way over here today.
That's great. How long have you been with Farmers Feed Cities?
Since the end of April.
I think a lot of people have probably seen that yellow banner with three words on it, and most people get it. Farmers Feed Cities, pretty obvious. How long has that organization been around now, do you remember how it came to be? I vaguely remember.
Yeah. Well, the campaign kind of started back in 2005.
Yes.
And kind of the reason it's still affiliated with Grain Farmers of Ontario is the grain farmers were lobbying the government for the risk management program.
Mm-hmm.
And Farmers Feed Cities, you know, that embodies it all. That says, you know, point blank, farmers are important. We need our farmers. So it was kind of just a slogan they used in their lobbying efforts. In 2007, you know, we abandoned all political objectives. You know, we're not a lobbying effort anymore. We're promotional, not political.
Okay, I get it.
Yeah. So you know, that's where it came from. But now we're all about consumer outreach. And, you know, as I said before, we promote agriculture, promote farmers. And we also provide some information on, you know, what farmers do exactly and, you know, how they do benefit us every day.
So tell us about the typical, who do you reach out to? So, you know, here on radio today, and you had done some TV with your coworker last week, right?
Yeah.
And so are you into the school systems or where do you find your outreach going?
Well, we do have a variety of outlets that we're working through. Primarily, you know, we try to talk to urban consumers because... Mm-hmm. You know, less than 2% of Canadians do live on farms nowadays, and when you're growing up in the city, you know, you're not exposed to agriculture as much, and you might not know quite as much about it. So we try to, you know, go out in the city. We try to do some urban outreach. We were at the CNE, the Canadian National Exhibition, back in August for almost 3 weeks, and there was actually a variety of other agricultural organizations there. We had, you know, the dairy farmers were there, Ontario Pork was there, Ontario Beef, and we had all these live animals, and we got to, you know, show the people of Toronto, you know, this is what animals look like, explain to them, you know, this is what we do on our farms, this is where your food comes from.
Well, that seems like a great one, because the farm population is 1 or 2% of Ontario's population, and boy, is it a struggle to get our message out there.
Exactly.
And going to Toronto, that's just to the CNE is... the great. You guys won the Royal Winter Fair? That's coming up.
Well, okay. The Royal Winter Fair starts next Friday. actually was doing some preparation for that this morning, so we're getting ready for that. It's going to be good.
Yeah, you're telling me you're carrying the ship this next little while your coworker is off doing holidays right now, I believe, right?
Yep. Well, not holidays. She is. She'll be hard at work down in Australia.
Oh, okay. That's right. She did go.
Going to get a little firsthand farm experience.
Yeah.
But yeah, we definitely, you know, we've got lots to do, and we're just going to keep on going.
So we'll go to a break in shortly, but before we do that, let's just go through some of the stuff you found in the survey, some of the quick stuff here.
Sure.
I'm just holding up this one. We can work off the same sheet maybe. That's our, if you want to do that. So this is a one-page publication, and you can probably find this at www.farmersfeedcities.com, I would think, right?
Mm-hmm.
And do you want to just tell us if there's about four or five bullet points here? Can you like to tell our listeners what you've got on this one piece of paper, please?
Sure. So just a few of the highlights that we've got here of the statistics that we did find that were pretty interesting. So to start, 81% of Canadian respondents to the survey that typically buy free-run eggs believe the chickens producing those eggs have access to the outdoors. In reality, it's free-range eggs, not free-run eggs that have, you know, the chickens have access to the outdoors. So that just shows, you know, some of these food choices are being based on misconceptions. Next up, nearly 70% of the people surveyed believe that, you know, our dairy and our meat products have high levels of hormones, antibiotics. In reality, you know, the CFIA, the Canadian Food Inspection Agency,
yes,
it exists and it does test these things, which kind of ties into the next statistic that only 66% of Canadians were aware that the CFIA even exists.
Awesome.
So, you know, before our food makes its way into the food chain, it is tested. The CFIA checks for antibiotics, checks for hormones. As a former dairy man, I'm sure you're quite familiar with the testing process in dairy.
Oh,
it is
my goodness,
very,
you know,
very, very strict.
I've been in the business for a while, but I noticed some of my guys are still in dairy. There's this huge checklist they have to go through to maintain their licenses. There must be three or four pages, and every year there's more. Just the diligence and the requirements they have, even environmental concerns. But, yeah, I can certainly agree with what you said there.
Yeah, absolutely. so, you know, our food is tested, and, you know, if it doesn't meet industry standards, it will be discarded. So we do know what we're eating is safe.
So you find people are really, you and I were just discussing beforehand how there seems to be that gap between, like, those of the persons in the industry and then know about agriculture and, you know, for lack of a better word, what I think the typical Ontarian would think is agriculture. But we just want to talk about that in-between stuff where, you know, with knowing more of the details in between how things are tested, you become a better judge of agriculture.
Yeah, well, you know, the more knowledge you have,
yes,
you know, the better you'll be able to understand what is going on in the industry.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what our aim of this survey is to, you know, point out that food choices, you know, many food choices are being based on misconceptions, and we want everyone to have the facts so that, you know, they can be aware of what is going on in our industry, and at the same time, you know, they can base their choices on the facts.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that mentioned about the chickens there, that's true. And I sell on my smaller farm now, I do sell chicken eggs.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's all great fun, and it's just a delight. And everyone, of course, asks, what are these chickens? And then it certainly takes a bit of time, but just to find out that, in fact, these results are very true and that a lot of Canadians don't know that there's in between free range and free run.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, there's organic. And it just seems to me, isn't there like about four or five categories of
eggs
options?
Well, there'd be conventional, so
yes,
in the cages. There'd be free run,
yep,
free range,
yeah,
organic, which could span, you know,
it could be free run and free range.
Yeah, because
right,
conventional free run, free range, that's based on housing conditions,
mm-hmm,
not on the production method.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, then there's also organic and, you know, then you have the nutritional variation. So you have omega-3,
right,
that kind of thing. But, you know, no matter what the type of production, we, you know, again, what it comes down to is these things are, you know, tested, and we know it's all good. It's all safe.
Yeah, we're lucky. People have these choices, and you can find
exactly
something like that fits your values and so on. But our message here, I guess, today is find out what those labels mean.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
Don't just take the first.
Absolutely. And, you know, we're so fortunate in Canada to have so many choices. And, you know, we know that they're all good choices.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, people have different preferences. People are going to prefer different things. But, you know, take into consideration your preferences, take into consideration what the facts are,
yeah,
and then make your choice.
Exactly. And so you can make a choice And, you know, in our this show is sponsored by Federation of Agriculture, and our members are span the range. And so we're not really we're okay with whatever the customer wants. We can do that. Mm-hmm. We just want you, the customer to know how we do it, and that the customer to know what that means.
Absolutely.
That would be, isn't it? It's really cool nowadays that people have an interest in food. I mean, it depends on where you are in the spectrum. If you're a producer, then you feel some pressure that you to the various requests and that people have. But the other side of the coin, isn't it great that people have an interest, and you can hopefully, you know, for the future, you can this will grow sales.
Absolutely. And, you know, this is an awesome thing. Consumers are interested in what they're eating. And, you know, this gives a starting point, really, for farmers to get out there and, you know, talk about what they're doing and, you know, talk about the great food that they do produce. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, it's awesome that consumers are interested in what they're buying. Now we just need to, you know, bridge the gap between interest and knowledge and, you know, again, provide the facts.
Well, we're going to have a great show today, and so I guess we'll move on to our next segment here. We'll do play a few songs and some promo stuff, and then we're right back with my guest, Dennis Jansen. This is episode number 28, and it's October the 23rd here in the year 2012, and we finally have some rain.
Yeah. Yeah, we do.
It's been a dry summer, hasn't it?
Yep. It's been a dry summer, but the last few days have been a little moist, to say the least.
A little soggy. I guess it's moisture for next year. Okay, folks, you're at 100.3 Sound FM, CKMS Radio. It's your host, Jeff Steger, and this is the Agriculture Show. We'll be right back.
Shoe fly pie, an apple pan, dowdy makes your eyes. Light up, you come and say a howdy, shoe fly pie, an apple pan dowdy. I'll never get enough of that wonderful stuff. Shoe fly pie, an apple pan dowdy makes the sun come out when heavens are cloudy. Shoe fly pie, an apple pan dowdy. I'll never get enough of that wonderful stuff. Mama, you bake, Mama, I don't want cake, Mama, for my sake, I'm going to the oven to make some ever-loving shoe fly pie, an apple pan dowdy makes your eyes light up, you'll come and say a howdy, shoe fly pie, an apple pan dowdy, I'll never get enough of that wonderful stuff.
Hi, this is Nelson Rosales from World Accord. You're listening to The Agriculture Show on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM.
So that's a little song called Shoe Fly Pie by Campus 5, a great swingy tune, and a little promo from Nelson Rosales, our guest from last week. I have a nice little clip here I'm going to play next. Is from the our new neophyte Junior Farmer Club in Warley Region, being renewed, revigored, courtesy of Barkley Knapp and some other volunteers. And they very kindly sent along a little news clip of what's going on with them. So we'll play that, and then we'll be back with our guest.
The Waterloo Junior Farmer Monthly Report.
Hi there, this is Marty Metzger from the Waterloo Junior Farmers. For the month of October, our club will be keeping very busy. As part of our efforts to help in the community, we will be working on removing trash from our adopted section of Nafsinger Road later in the month. We are also looking to do a trick-or-treat canning drive to help out the local food bank. We also have a provincial competition coming up at the end of the month called Autumn Profile that will be hosted by the Brandt Junior Farmers. The Waterloo Junior Farmers will be competing against other junior farmer clubs across Ontario in a variety of farm-themed competitions for most of a day. The next meeting of Waterloo Junior Farmers will be at the old New Hamburg Arena at 2 p.m. on November 4th. If you know someone interested in learning more about junior farmers in Waterloo, please contact us at waterloojf@jfao.on.ca. That, again, is waterloojf@jfao.on.ca. Junior Farmers is a rural youth program for ages 15 to 19. It is open to all youth, no matter what background. A special thanks to Sound FM. And now let's get back to today's broadcast.
Oh, that was great. I'm so glad they sent that in. One of our earlier shows included the Junior Farmers, and we had a good time that day, and also had the 4-H on here as well. So that was it's nice to see. That's another part of agriculture in Ontario, which is a social part, and for young people, boy, there's no end to it. All previous shows have had some great guests on the social part of urban, of rural life, sorry.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a big part of it.
Did you ever the 4-H Junior Farmer stuff at all in your...
I actually didn't when I was younger. Unfortunately, looking back, I kind of wish I did. I'm starting to get a little involved with it now, actually.
There's a junior farm club on campus, I think, isn't there?
I'm not sure if there's one on campus. There's certainly one in the area.
Yeah.
The junior farmers are actually hosting an Ontario Young Farmers Forum coming up at the end of November. They're having this conference in Mississauga. So taking part in that, looking forward to it.
Well, that'll be the annual meeting for the Federation of Agriculture, I think, right?
Could very well be.
I think they've had, I'll check into it, but I think that's the same thing.
Yeah, it could be. Hmm.
Okay, well, that's good news. So, folks, junior farmers, you can, as a young person, you can try a whole bunch of different things you never would have thought about if you're a person lives in town. Good bunch of people and doing lots of activities that would be new and different for anyone. So let's get back to our show here today. Dennis, we're into a big job here trying to keep up with all the stuff you're up to here. I'm wondering, would you be interested in looking at some of these questions that we have on that survey? I think I got a notion that our listeners might be kind of... tell us how the survey is done first.
Okay.
Tell us about that.
Well, first, you know, we started out and we knew that we wanted to run a survey on consumer food choices, just, you know, to gauge an idea of what people are basing their food choices on and what food choices they are making. So from that starting point, we kind of, we did some brainstorming, had some long nights drinking lots of coffee, and, you know, we kind of came up with these questions. And then we actually had, as I said before, we had the third-party survey group. They did the survey for us.
Mm-hmm.
So they conducted the survey nationwide, which was, I believe this was our first nationwide survey we've done, which was great, because it's interesting to see the trends, to see, you know, how food choices do vary across the country, and just to gain a nationwide image as opposed to just a provincial image.
And now I've opened up the one that is was labeled as the Ontario version of this, so I think it's probably pretty close, but being this is an Ontario broadcast here, and this is our show is for our listeners here in the Waterloo region, I suppose it's a better fit. The survey was done by a notable firm, and the usual caveat, it's accurate within one or two points of 19 out of 20 times or something I was reading.
Yeah.
It's pretty standard survey, I think,
yep.
Right?
Yep, you know, standard, pretty standard survey. All the, it's accredited, so all of the, yeah. You know, all of it's there, all of it's good.
So it looks like a lot of these questions actually are have to do with chickens, but I see there's a few here about meat, milk, and beef cows and stuff like that. So let's just go into some of these questions, and I don't know. Let's see. So here, right off the bat, the first question is, what type of eggs do you typically buy? So what do people typically buy when they buy eggs? Do you have a sense of what their first choice is?
I believe the... Okay. I actually don't have that document in front of me here.
Okay.
I believe the first choice was conventional. Because, you know, when you vary with the different choices, you know, you have conventional, you have your free run, you have your free range. Conventional just seems to be, you know, that
all
would
right.
be...
Here we go. I just scroll down this document. So here we... It's regular conventional eggs, free run eggs... Free-range eggs, I don't buy eggs.
That is an option.
That is an option. So those are seen by good questions for people. It highlighted the free-run, free-range thing and, of course, the regular conventional. It's, it would be nice if we were looking at the same page here. You could migrate back here and have a look at this if you want. Do you want to come around the table here, or do you want to try a different thing on here? Because these questions are really good, and I wouldn't mind having your input on.
Sure, I'll come around over there.
Some of the deals and so on. There's another chair back here, so we can do that, and we can certainly share a microphone. No problem there. So just roll up there, and I'll put the boost onto this thing and put that down. And looks like our sound levels are still good here. We'll speak up as best we... Yeah, that's not too bad.
Well, that should work.
Moving kind of. Look at this. I can't even read now. Okay. So what's a good question you like to... would you like to... some of these questions are really insightful, I think, into why people choose what they do.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So, this is an odd one here. Like, you don't need to wash organic food as thoroughly as conventional food. To the best of your knowledge,
well, and that's, you know, that's
which is a folly is true or false. So let's just for fun whip down to that one. Where did it go already? Oh, right there.
Right,
okay,
there.
I think this hyperlink should work, right?
The next one.
The next one?
Yeah.
Should I double click that guy?
Yes.
Let's try that.
No. But with
why don't I just go down there and check that out? I mean, it's on your table six.
Sure.
Maybe simpler. That's number four. Oh my goodness. We're getting almost there. Table six. So the question is, that doesn't look like the same one. Well, maybe just above that, right?
Yeah, well, back to the question. The question was, you know, we wanted to see, you know, do you need to wash your organic foods as thoroughly as your, you know, your conventional foods? And, you know, what it comes down to is, you know, of course, just for, you know, safety purposes and for food preparation purposes, you should wash both, right? Absolutely. But, you know, both of those, both organic and conventional foods, you know, with produce as well, you know, they've been grown using different production methods, but they still meet the same safety and nutrition standards. So, you know, they're both absolutely safe and absolutely fine.
What we can do, this may take some time to do it. Let's just go through these questions. And the whole point is, I think, you know, you've been able to summarize these things into your results.
Yeah.
Okay. So just, I guess it's just me wanting to be thorough, but it seems to me it would be fun just to see these kind of questions. We hope our listeners say, yeah, these are questions that concern me.
Mm-hmm.
And then and your part of your presentation later on will be what the results were and what the public can get some comfort from that. So
sure.
So do you need to wash organic food as thoroughly as conventional? It's the best, you know, let's see. Organic food typically comes from family owned farms. Well, that seems reasonable, but maybe not.
Yeah. Well, one of the things we found, with organic foods, and we did touch on in the highlight reel there is, you know, just under 2% of Canadian farms are organic.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's, there's certainly a market for it there. And, you know, organic food is certainly something that's generated a lot of discussion in the last little while. But what we wanted consumers to realize is, you know, organic is great, you know, and it's great that we have another option. And, you know, organic farms are just under 2% of the farms in Canada, yeah. though. So what that turns out to is that most of our organic food is imported. About 70% of the organic food consumed in Canada is imported. So that comes down to the point, you know, do you want to consume local or do you want to consume organic? Mm-hmm. And what we found with the survey respondents, about 86% of people were interested and, you know, committed to supporting local. About 29% were committed to supporting organic. So, you know, again, we have that choice there, and that's fantastic. You know, our organization, we promote Ontario's farmers, Ontario's agriculture. So if you are going to choose organic, you know, try and look for the Ontario logo or, you know, at least if not Ontario, Canadian.
Yeah, that's a whole new topic too, that whole labeling thing. Like, there's a guy talking to me the other day about eggs, and what was his question? And, you know, I said to him, yeah, sorry, at this stage, that product's not labeled as well as it could be. And like, you know, the dairy guys, they got that little blue cow. That tells you that's Ontario.
Yeah.
And now, so how is the consumer supposed to know quickly whether that product they like and sounds what they want is, in fact, legally labeled as such? Like, is there a grading system for eggs like that? I can't remember. Is it, can you have a Canadian? Like, it sort of implied this all Canadian eggs because it's supply and management. That's the deal. But...
we'll see. Yeah, that's the thing. You know, with eggs, most of our eggs, I had an egg farmer tell me the stat the other day. I think it's something like, you know, 97% of our eggs are, you know, you go to the grocery store and you can take for granted that they are Canadian.
Yeah.
There's actually found an interesting stat around the holidays, so Christmas and Easter, we actually get a little bit of a boost in eggs from the States. So there will be a little bit of increase in imports there. But, you know, generally you go to the store and you can assume that your eggs are going to be Canadian. But labeling does vary, and, you know, again, it's up to the consumer. You know, if you're going to base your choices on facts, we want you to certainly check the labels.
Yeah.
And, you know, most on eggs, most will say at least Canadian, you know.
Now, I really like this next question. I think this gets to the heart of a lot of the things that we would like to see the consumers know. So I'll just read it first, and I'll give my first impression of what's going on here, and we'll see if you... So here's a statement. Cows that are fattened on feedlots can still be labeled organic as long as they're given organic feed. Now, right off the bat, there's two things happening there. In my opinion, the press would suggest that anything on feedlots is bad.
Mm-hmm.
However, the statement is, if they're fed organic, are they still organic?
Mm-hmm.
And see, to me, this says, this is how we're going to parse out or help the consumer make a good decisions as far as their food,
mm-hmm.
with some comfort and knowing it respects their values. Am I adding too much to this question? I thought it was a great question.
No, that's a good question. It's certainly a loaded one.
Yeah, that's the point, right? It challenges the listener or the respondent to balance, not to clump together feedlots with non-organic.
Mm-hmm.
Feedlots can be organic,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah, certainly they could be. You know, again, what organic comes down to is... to label your food as organic, there are strict standards that have to be met. There's certification bodies that will certify food as being organic. So, you know, in theory, as long as, you know, those animals are produced according to organic standards, absolutely, they could be labeled organic.
We could have a lot of fun going through each of these questions and examining them. Here's one. Next three are organic farms, and in order, one is organic farmers don't apply pesticides. Next question is, don't apply herbicides. And the last question is, don't apply fungicides.
Mm-hmm.
Lots in there, you know, the short answer would be yes. The long answer is they would more likely use natural pesticides, herbicides, and fungicides.
Yes, so that's another thing there. You know, there are still organic pesticides that are used. They're certainly different than conventional pesticides. They won't be synthetic compounds and such, but there are still... you know, natural pesticides that can be used.
Fungicides and so on, yeah. Here's a question you mentioned before, the majority of organic food sold in Canada is imported. That's true, isn't it?
Yep. The official stat from OMAFRA is just over 70% of the organic food consumed in Canada is imported. So that's, you know, that's quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, what it comes down to is, you know, try to check your label and look for Ontario, look for Canada.
It just occurred to me, hopefully our listeners are interested. Could they find this on that website, you know? Or
We have our press release published.
Okay, and we'll talk about that. I've got that printed off here. We'll talk about that in the next section,
yep,
I guess.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, okay. Our press release kind of encompasses all the points that we wanted to highlight, and is just kind of, you know, just a big highlight reel. And also on our website, you can, if you go to the news section of our website, we have a whole comprehensive list of all the media we've been featured in. So, mm-hmm. You know, definitely lots of good info to find there.
There's some cool stuff here. I just, how are we doing for time? I guess, we'll go up to another 5 minutes in this and we'll get onto our last segment, or
sure.
Second last one. Okay, are all meat and milk products tested before they're allowed to be sold? Yes, and cows tend to have high levels of artificial hormones and antibiotics, which makes their way into the food chain. That sounds like a common concern of lots of people.
Well, and again, you know, that's a good question to ask. And people are, you know, at events I've been at on behalf of Farmers Feed Cities, these are questions I'm asked quite often, because
yep.
people are, you know, they are looking into it and are concerned about it. These are definitely good things for consumers to try and get to the bottom to.
There's a question about artificial hormones and beef cattle and chickens full of vaccine and all kinds of stuff here. Holy doodle. Let's see. Here's another topic that's really popping nowadays. I've done a show on that yet, but maybe one day. It's genetically modified food. Now that's we're not even to discuss with the pros and cons, but let's find out what the question is people have about it. Right?
Mm-hmm. Well,
what are their concerns?
Well, first of all, what we find is a lot of people actually aren't even quite sure what genetically modified means.
Well, that's a good point.
Find
that,
and it's quite interesting. And you know, again, we're here to provide the facts, and you know, the fact of the matter that genetically modified foods or crops generally, you know, they'll have another biologically occurring trait from some other organism mm-hmm. that's been introduced, you know, to their gene sequence, and now they have, you know, a natural resistance to pests or to weeds, mm-hmm. so they can they better resist these things. And what that comes down to is, you know, we actually can apply less pesticides and herbicides, we can burn less fossil fuel spreading these pesticides around the field. So and ultimately it usually provides higher yields as well. So
I'm trying to figure out a way, just as in just based on the show and topic in general, how to deal with this genetically modified. And I'll try this on you first. You're my first victim.
Sure.
So as you know, there's natural selection and then there's intentional selection. So we intentionally put in these gene sequences in corn for defeating worms. And also for weed spray, and Roundup's probably the one. But if it was natural, you could do the same thing with natural selection. It would take you years, but essentially you would take normal corn and keep dosing with Roundup, and eventually one biotype would come out.
It would build a resistance to it.
Naturally, right? So the same process, only done quicker.
Okay.
yeah. Like, I'm just trying to take the edge out. Like, people are really getting hung up on this intervention, as if it's this, like, crazy stuff from another planet that shouldn't be done. But in fact, any of the plants we have nowadays have been non-genetically modified, have been selected on a very strict basis to do what they do, the natural wheats, for lack of a better word, all that stuff.
By natural selection?
Yeah, by older breeding techniques. We have genetically modified food since the beginning of time.
That's a good point.
Strictly speaking.
I've never heard that point raised before.
Well, I'm going to practice on some other people, but I just know there's this huge gap between trying to explain genetically modification to people
mm-hmm.
that it's, I mean, it's novel. Heck, I remember back when I started my farming, they had just come out with hybrid corn.
Mm-hmm.
And so hybrid corn is standard nowadays, and that's what people, I think, when you drive by a field, understand what corn is. It's for 50, 60 years now. But at the time, people said hybrid corn was the work of the devil. You were interfering with nature.
Hmm.
It was a thing we take for granted now, because it was done by crossing male and female plants to get this hybrid corn. A corn that is not, it can't replicate, because mm-hmm. it's the F1 hybrid like that. Not really F1. I better not get those in my forte. But it's not it's already been modified by natural means, by selecting male and female plants.
Mm-hmm.
But people know, if you went by a field of corn, they say, well, that's natural corn. When actually natural corn, if you went back to it, there's some, is that goes back to, you know, open pollinated varieties which only yield half of what we get now, and not consistently. Your place in time, it defines what you think is normal and not normal. Everything before that was a breakthrough back then is now normal for us.
Well, yeah, because that's it becomes the new norm, right?
The new norm. And so it's but I was going to save a list for another show on genetic modification.
you could have a
I just practicing.
Yeah, that's a good point. But yeah, what our bottom line with, you know, genetic modification is you know, first we try to just explain to people what in fact it is, because a lot of people hear it and they kind of, you know, they put this wall up because it's unfamiliar and they don't know what it necessarily means. But we, you know, we explain what it is. Actually, a show we were on a couple of weeks ago, we brought a bucket of conventional corn and we brought a bucket of GM corn. Sorry. Yeah. And, you know, we put them out there and, you know, we showed to people, you know, there is no visual difference. This one's just conventional and this one has some trait that's built in to, you know, resist a pest or resist a weed. And, you know, we explained exactly, you know, how that's done and, you know, what the benefits are. And also an important point is to explain, you know, these things are tested. You know, according to Health Canada, it's about a 7 to 10 year process to research, you know, test and get a new GM seed variety approved. So, you know, these things are tested and, you know, we know that they are safe and we know what they do. So that's the point we try to get across.
Okay, folks, let's take a little break here. There were actually 37 questions on here. We kind of did a stab at about 10 or 15 of them. And
There's lots of stuff.
In the next part of our show, we'll talk a little bit about some of the final results. And I know you have the press release there and a few other things, and we'll talk some more. So let's go back and play another song here, and we'll be right back and talking about agriculture with my guest, Dennis Jansen, and episode 28 here on the Agriculture Show, October 23rd. It's the Agriculture Show. It's your host, Jeff Steger. We shall be right back.
I like pie. I like cake. I like anything you bake. I like your crackers, too, crumbled up in chicken stew. When I see your jelly roll, then I lose my self-control. But of all these things, I like you best of all, yeah, you best of all.
Hi, this is Sawyer Edwardy from the International Plowing Match 2012 head office. You are listening to The Agriculture Show on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM. The Agriculture Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture.
Okay, we're back, folks, and as one of the traditions on my show is, on this show, The Agriculture Show, is I really do enjoy having my guests do a little promo for our show, because then I can play that in future shows. So I'll ask my guest today, Dennis, to read our little script there and listen in, folks. We're talking about our show here. Go ahead, Dennis.
Hi there. This is Dennis Jansen from Farmers Feed City speaking, and you're listening to The Agriculture Show on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM. The Agriculture Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture. The Waterloo Federation of Agriculture represents the primary producers in the region of Waterloo. Our goal is to promote the farm community in support of the innovation, hard work, and compassion that is emblematic of the region of Waterloo. The WFA strives to bring together the policy needs of the farmer with the needs of society.
Thank you. Well, that's not a bad promo, huh?
No, that's good.
it occurred to us, you know, we want our needs to match up what society wants, and we can do whatever you want, but this is what it costs, and what's the issues around doing that sort of thing. So I'm just trying to have fun with my guests when I put the word emblematic in there.
Caught me off guard a little for a minute there.
It's an odd word. It's almost, as many times I wish I should take it out, I find it's sort of a chuckling point with some guests. So back to our show, folks. It's the Agriculture Show. Dennis, we'll talk a little bit more about. We went through, as you know, guests. Our first segment was about getting introduced and Dennis telling us about where he comes from and how he's here at the show today, and we just wrapped up a section on some of the detailed questions within the survey, and on this section of our show, I'll ask Dennis to speak a little bit about the results and. The message to the consumers and urban and rural person alike about what all these questions ended up meaning.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks.
So, you know, with this survey, we did find out where consumers stand and, you know, what they are basing these choices on. So where we can go from here is, you know, this goes two ways. We want to encourage consumers to, you know, try to make the effort to figure out what they are basing their food purchasing choices on, you know, do a little research, make sure you check your labels, you know, find out where you stand and develop, as the term we've coined, develop your own informed food philosophy. Because, you know, everyone does have different choices and, you know, just make sure your choices are based on facts. On the other side, there's also an implication here for farmers. You know, there has been a real push in the last few years to develop a stronger connection between farmers and between society, you know, between consumers, and try to bridge that gap there, you know, bridge the knowledge gap, but also try to form, you know, a real connection, because it's important for consumers and also for farmers to have, you know, to have that two-way connection. So we want farmers to try and get out there and try to, you know, just even provide a little insight to consumers as to what exactly they do on their farms, you know, how high quality the food that they produce is. And, you know, there's a lot of ways for farmers to do this. A real push we've noticed lately is actually through social media, which has allowed, you know, an easy way for farmers who may have geographic barriers or who may have other barriers that, you know, can't always make it into the city. They're out in the country. And, you know, you've got the consumers in the city, and, you know, using the medium of social media, we can bridge this gap. And we've seen discussions facilitated through Facebook, through Twitter, you know, on our own accounts, but we've also seen it, you know, just in general. So a really good one that I'm a big fan of would have to be Twitter. There's a lot of farmers, it's actually quite surprising, that are active on Twitter. Well, I was quite surprised at first. But it's absolutely fantastic. It's so easy to use, you know, and farmers can just, on their day-to-day activities, you know, take a little picture, post a little blurb about it, and then, you know, what may seem like everyday chores to you, even if you're out in the barn, you know, feeding your cows, that's something consumers haven't seen before, and it's really interesting for them. So, you know, try to if you want to try to make an effort like that's absolutely awesome. It's a really easy tool to use, and, you know, it's important to bridge the gap between the farmers and between consumers and build a trusting relationship and build, you know, trust in the products and the food you are producing. So
yeah, I did actually investigate the Farmers Feed City Facebook page.
Yes.
Lots of good stuff on there.
Yep, we have a Facebook page. We're pretty active on there. We try to post lots of cool stuff, lots of fun stuff, lots of pictures, lots of just keeping people up to date with what we're up to. We have a Twitter handle as well. We're also very active on there. That would be at Farms Feed Cities. We have a Pinterest page as of late.
No way.
Still trying to learn the ropes with that one. I'm taking the task of running that. So trying to figure it out still, but it's going well. And we have the website as well. So www.farmersfeedcities.com.
Well, we'll go over those addresses again in our final outro in another 15 or 20 minutes. But any other news that you can pass along about the survey results? We started into that before we got sidetracked things.
Sure.
So I noticed in one little piece of paper I had here some stuff about that the Canadians are interested in buying local and organic. Well, the majority of Canadians realize.
Yes. So that's actually one of the points we did touch on.
Okay.
We wanted to find out, you know, to consumers, is buying local important? Is buying organic important? And what we found is 86% of respondents nationwide said, you know, buying local is important to me. I'm committed to doing that, which is absolutely fantastic. And we asked the same question with organics, and we found that 29% of consumers are committed to buying organics. So these are some pretty interesting statistics, especially when you get to, you know, are you committed to supporting local? And, you know, for Farmers Feed Cities, our definition of local is Ontario. We're fortunate to have so many choices in Ontario. You know, we can grow everything from, we got peaches and, you know, fruits and wines over in Niagara. We've got, you know, southwestern, midwestern Ontario filled with beef, dairy, chickens, crops, you name it. We've got lots of good stuff in Ontario. And, you know, it makes it very easy to support Ontario. And one of our main points is that, you know, agriculture is a huge economic driver in Ontario. Just recently, it actually became the number one industry in Ontario. Agriculture and agri-food together.
Yeah, the processing whole works. Yeah,
yeah. So right. The whole chain, you know, the whole food production whole cycle.
Yep.
And, you know, it's a huge economic driver. It contributes so much back to our province, you know, in terms of taxes, in terms of job creation. The most recent stat I've heard is 1 in 7 jobs are directly tied to agriculture or agri-food. So again, you know, that makes it very important to support Ontario. And when you put it that way, you know, it's good incentive to support Ontario, because you support Ontario farmers, it comes back to you via the province's economy. So it's important.
I didn't see, I saw something here I wanted to ask you about, and now it's gone again.
Sure.
Suddenly gone. I mean, pardon my language.
Nope, not a problem. I'm sure we can find it.
I got sidetracked. I'm tempted to, as you know, I like to have my guests' music play on here, and I'm sure that as we get to the end of the show, I can see maybe I can fire up one of these songs. You want to talk about something for about 2 minutes, and I could probably
sure
find
thing.
This thing.
I did.
You want? We haven't talked a little about food testing.
Sure.
I know what I was going to talk about. So there's a local food act proposed for Ontario. Now,
yes.
That was the government has been prorogued, mm-hmm. So that isn't there. Now, when I was reviewing the data, the information from that, the press release or some of the original documents, they actually had three descriptions for local food, which would be what the target institutions would use, the university and so on. One was local. And the definition one is organic, which is a definition you can find easily. And then the one was more like a conventional agricultural. So as I relayed, like the ex-dairy farmer, they have a huge checklist. Mm-hmm. One could argue that, in fact, that is local food because it's local conditions, respecting the local conservation areas and that sort of thing. Did you guys, the Local Food Act should fit hand in hand with this stuff, because
yes.
The definitions are going to generate for that ought to fit quite well with the goal of... What you're trying to do is get people, this is what this is, so you know when you buy something.
Absolutely. So, you know, I just went on a little monologue there about local food. But with
we
the
like
local
monologues. They're good.
With the Local Food Act, one of the objectives was, you know, to try and get residents of Ontario to support local food and support Ontario, and that's important. And the one of the phrases, I guess, that was thrown around while discussing the Local Food Act was $10 a week on local food will contribute $2.4 billion to Ontario's Ontario's economy.
Yeah, okay.
And I'd actually heard this phrase before. I don't know if you've heard of Lido Grislow. She's the author of The Ontario Table.
Okay.
A fantastic cookbook that highlights different regions in Ontario and kind of showcases the best of what they have to offer. But she... I believe she first coined this phrase, actually, and you know, by the estimation they did, $10 a week, I believe per family, will equal $2.4 billion in revenue for the province. So, you know, that goes to show, you know, there's a multiplier effect there. But you know, it goes to show that even if each family contributes, you know, $10 a week to local food, you know, whatever that may be, that will in turn result in about $2.4 billion, a huge, huge number. So, you know, that goes to show that doing your little part to try to support local, you know, will have huge, huge benefits.
No, that's good to, yeah, I know, and, you know, in the Arctic region, some other guests have mentioned they did a food study and find out how many miles stuff travels to get here and how much money stays in the community if you do buy local.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, it's nice to see those things being done after all these years, just to see what the local food impact. It's always been, you know, oh yeah, there's farm stuff, there's always stuff, but it's nice to get some data to make decisions on.
Yeah.
You got to measure stream flows to see how much water conservation you need, and you need to measure traffic flows to see how much buildings, how much more road you have to build or whatever. And
exactly.
Why not with food and agriculture too? Get that baseline data in there like that. Yeah, so... So guess what? I found a song.
Very good.
I'm going to try to play this. The first on the list, this is one of my guests. This is Eric Church, Creeping.
Yes.
You like that one? Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm going to try to fire this up. And you don't want to, maybe just for the fun of this, the idea was, you tell us just exactly why you like this song and where you first heard it, just to give a little background here.
Well, coming from where I come from, and, well, I don't know if that has everything to do with it, but I am a fan of country music.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, it's not my my only source of musical entertainment, but it's definitely a big one. Kind of heard this song over the summer and just kind of thought, you know, hey, I kind of like this song. So it's catchy. It's got a good rhythm to it. So that'd be one of the reasons I suggested it for today.
Okay. So I'm going to try something new here and click on this thing. And this may take a moment, but we'll be back shortly. It's the Agriculture Show with Jeff Steger, and the guest today is Dennis Jansen. We'll be right back.
Hours and it only feels like four. It feels like four tops.
This year, we're finally getting everything that we didn't get.
I guess we'll skip the ad.
Creepin', 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 creepin'. Head full of I thought I found my way out of this pain, only to find your old memory train.
Creeping. Creeping. Creeping.
I'm Ray Dedman from Roseville. You are listening to the Agriculture Show on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM. The Agriculture Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture.
Okay, we're back. It's the Agriculture Show. We're in the last 15 minutes, and we haven't covered half the stuff we could, but we did pretty good so far, I think,
yeah,
Dennis.
Yeah, we got through a pretty good portion of it.
We're going to just kind of do a little outro on our show now and just cover some stuff, cover off some stuff, maybe not, we just remember to do. Just remind our listeners, Dennis is a local boy from Drayton and working with Farmers Feed Cities.
Yep.
And so student at the University of Guelph and working hard here to keep our public, keep some facts and alternatives to the public. And we talked a little bit about the actual study and some of the questions. It was like 37 questions on there. Pretty cool questions. That'd be fun to answer.
Yeah, we found out a lot of cool stuff. One of the points that we actually didn't cover that I usually like to cover, you know, you're from a dairy background. I've had some experience in dairy myself. So mm-hmm. This is one of the examples I usually use when I'm talking about, you know, antibiotic or hormone use in animals. So in the dairy industry, for example, if an animal is treated, you know, with antibiotics, then there's a certain withdrawal period, a certain flushing period, you know, and the veterinarians, the scientists, they determine these periods based on scientific study they've done. But when we administer these substances, there are certain time periods, you know, that we need to let these substances dissipate from the animal's systems before they can be milked again, before that milk can be shipped.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever I get to talking about, you know, in fact, every shipment that leaves the milk house, that leaves the farm, they do take a sample from it and they test it. And if, you know, they do find levels of antibiotics, you know, that shipment will be discarded and the farmer will actually be penalized and have to cover the cost of the load of the milk, which, you know, it can be upwards of tens of thousands of dollars. So whenever I use that example, that one really seems to hit home for some reason, because people see, you know, wow, there are these strict testing procedures in place, and, you know, our food is monitored, and we can trust that there are barriers and safeguards. And, you know, the same for meat. When meat goes for processing, they do testing for residues of hormones and antibiotics.
I'm going to just take those kisses and put them in a box with a piggy bank.
Miss, do you still want to buy these cookies?
There we go. Pardon me. I had some other stuff floating in the background. I was trying to find that video.
Oh, no problem.
I think we're okay again now. Okay. Sorry to interrupt you.
Not a problem. But yeah, that's one of those... that's one of the points I really like to talk about, because it's from an industry that I've had experience with myself. So, but yeah, it's good. And another thing I found is that when, as I was saying before, it's important for farmers to try and get in touch with the public and talk to the public, because farmers have this credibility. It's shocking how many times, you know, I've been talking to someone from the public and they'll say, you know, well, are you a farmer? And I'll say, you know, yeah, I grew up on a farm. I worked on a farm for several years. And, you know, that really makes them... It gives you that credibility, and it builds that trust with your product. So again, I said it before, it's important for farmers to get out there and try to talk to the public and, you know, not just have this face of agriculture as an industry, but actually put, you know, personal faces to the industry. It's really important, and I could go on and on about the necessity for that.
Well, that's it's true. The best spokesman for something is a person who's actually doing it.
So, absolutely.
Yeah, I think you know it doesn't extend to all kinds of things. You like to talk to someone in the health sciences, you know, or some other experts to help interpret what these things actually mean.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a great comfort, and I'm glad what you're doing there with Farmers Feed Cities too, about trying to get that message out there. There's you're one of many groups that do that. There's oh my goodness, there's two that we just combined: Animal Health Council, Animal.
Yes, that would be OFAC, Ontario Farm Animal Council, and AgCare.
Hey, and their mandate is to try to get that same message out.
Yes, and they've actually just they've merged, and they're now known as Farm and Food Care Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
They're actually an organization we work pretty closely with on a lot of stuff.
That makes sense.
Yeah, we have very similar mandates. You know, they have some really great resources. We have some good resources ourselves, and we combine our efforts on a lot of things and, you know, try to get out there and talk to the public.
I think I got this song lined up. We'll probably do that as our final out note sort of thing here.
Sure thing.
Do you want to remind us all about some of the websites and links and resources that are online?
Absolutely. We're pretty active online, as I was saying before. We do have a Facebook page. If you just go to Facebook, search Farmers Feed Cities, I'm sure it'll come up. We have a Twitter handle as well, at Farms Feed Cities. Very active on there. We have Pinterest as well. And then we have our website, www.farmersfeedcities.com. And the website's got a lot of great resources on it as well. And if there's ever anything you're looking to know, or maybe would like to, some info you'd like to gather from us, all of our contact info is on there, and you can shoot us over an email, and we'd be happy to answer any questions.
And they can always go on to the Winter Fair and talk to you in person.
Yep.
I guess you're probably down there every day, huh?
Yep, that would be even better. I'm planning on being down there for the whole span of it. I've got a really, really great staff of volunteers lined up, so it's going to be it's going to be good. Definitely looking forward to it.
Well, it sounds like it'd be a great time, and to keep up that good work there. So, Dennis, thanks so much for coming out today.
Thanks for having me.
You've been a good part of our show, the Agriculture Show here, sponsored by the Federation of Agriculture, Wardu Federation. And good luck with what you're doing there. I guess you're going to hold down the fort for a little while, huh?
Yep. I got a little while longer to go, but I'm definitely looking forward to it and try to do the best that I can.
When does your co-op term end and back to school?
Co-op term ends end of December.
Yeah.
And then in January, actually, I'll be getting on a plane myself. I'm going to the Netherlands to do an exchange at a university there for 5 months.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty exciting year.
There's a lot of that. I know lots of people that are doing that so they can take courses to their that further their own diploma or degree, but they can be taken at other universities as equivalents.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I'm going to the university I'm going to there. They're primarily a life sciences and agriculture school as well. So they do have a lot of courses that line up. And fortunately, I was able to make it work, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, it sounds like there's lots of opportunity to come on. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
All right, folks. It's about 3:20 in the afternoon here. I think we're probably going to wrap up our show now. We have to make room for the next disc jockey, and we'll be back next week with the Agriculture Show. Next week will be episode number 29. This is episode number 28, and my guest today was Dennis, and it's October 23rd. And thanks again, Dennis, for coming on the show.
Thanks again for having me.
All right, folks, we'll play out this song. See you next week.
Baby, a song, you made me want to roll my windows down and cruise. South Georgia water. Thought, oh good Lord, she had them long tan legs. Couldn't help myself, so I walked up and said, well, baby, you a song. You make me wanna roll my windows down and cruise down a back road, blowing stop signs through the middle, every little farm town.
She was sipping on Southern and singing Marshall Tucker. We were falling in love in the sweetheart of summer. She hopped right up into the cab of my truck and said, fire it up, let's go get this thing stuck. Baby, what song you make me want to roll my windows down and cruise down a back road, blowing stop signs through the middle, every little farm town with you in this brand new Chevy with a lift kit. Would look a hell of a lot better with you up in it. So baby, what song you make me want to roll my windows down and cruise? When that summer sun fell to his knees, I looked at her and she looked at me, and I turned on those KC lights and drove all night, 'cause it felt so right. Her and I, man, we feel so right. I put it in park and grabbed my guitar and strummed a couple chords and sang from the heart. Girl, you sure got the beat in my chest bumping. Hell, I can't get you out of my head. Baby, what song you